Sports Talk Radio for the Brainerd Lakes. 1380 KLIZ AM. Brainerd Baxter, the fan.
It's time for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, the fan, featuring Colin McDonald and Chris Foley. Today's broadcast is sponsored by Craigan's Legacy Courses, Tito's Handmade Vodka, Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, The Tea Hive, The Holiday Station on Mill Avenue, and Maury's Market. Streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, sponsored by Mills GM. And now, here's Chris Foley and Colin McDonald for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, the fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ, the fan, streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, now available at Podcast One. Streaming thanks to our sponsor, Mills GM, the home of affordable luxury, the 2019 Buicks. Chris Foley with me, of course. Chris, a big week on the women's tour. We're going to take one attempt at the champ's name, Liang Jen Lee 6. So we're just going to call her Lee 6 from now on. She wins, and it's kind of a cool story. She's the sixth South Korean woman with Lee, and the fifth plays on tour as well. So she's just adopted the name Six. Everybody on tour calls her Six. She signs her golf ball or autograph that way.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Oh, it's great. And her actually on the Korean Ladies Tour, which is huge over there, there are six girls with her same name.
Yeah.
First and last name. Yeah. So she took Lee Six, and it's stuck, and it's she's got a great story. Her father was a mechanic in Taiwan, and mother was I can't remember what her mother's profession is, but they did everything they could for their daughter to be able to continue to play golf, and she played really well on the Korean tour the last couple of years, and this is her rookie year on the U.S. tour, and she's had a fantastic year. She's played in 10 or 11 events and finished top 25 every event but one. So she's having a heck of a rookie year.
I think she was the only one of the top half dozen or so that shot maybe one under or even. That golf course played tough in South Carolina there. Pretty strong leader field down the stretch, and international field like it always is now on the women's tour. But yeah, she's kind of fun to watch, and hopefully she's got some personality, so that's good. Jack's tournament, the Memorial. Boy, Patrick Cantlay on Sunday didn't leave too much doubt about how good a golfer he's going to be.
No, he had a great final round, a great tournament, and he is coming out of college, he was kind of a can't miss player, and that same class as Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas and the spring break crew. And he's had a tough go. His caddy was killed right in front of him. He stepped off a curb after one tournament and got hit by a car, and he struggled with that and then struggled with some injuries post that. But I think hopefully he's back on track, and great win for him.
Yeah, he's had a lot. I think Jack is one of his mentors, too. He seems to know Nicklaus pretty well, and was certainly grateful to win that tournament. Adam Scott was right there. Adam Scott's got his game about as good as it's been in several years. He just needs to make a few putts, which is what they always say about Adam Scott. But he started to make a few this last weekend. He finished two back and in second place. And Martin Keimer's game kind of returned. He was, I want to say, down around 200 or something in the world, and ended up leading after 54 holes, and came third. So yeah, not
great,
bad.
Great event for Keimer, and another great week for Jordan Spieth. So he is, every week he just seems to be playing a little better and a little better, so which is nice to see.
He's got to open up a little room on Sundays. He doesn't have the Sunday game kind of dialed yet.
Not quite, but he's getting there, and I think, we've got a big tournament coming up in 2 weeks with the with the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, and about 3 weeks after that, the Open Championship at Port Marnock, and he's won both of those, so.
Yeah. And so is a guy named Tiger Woods, who's playing pretty
well. Yes, he has.
He took, I think he took this week off, did he? No, he played in the Jack's tournament. Yes. He actually played well. He ended up finishing ninth. Yeah. Came back with a nice Sunday. I think he had 67 on Sunday. So, yeah. Jack's tournament, for the first time that I can remember, had four great days of weather. That thing always gets rain.
They have been they've been cursed with not good weather. You know, there was a the site of Muirfield Village. There were some Indian burial grounds not far from there that they kind of worked around, and they've always talked about that being a little bit of a curse for the Memorial tournament.
Okay, yeah. We've got a fun guest on today. Andy Johnson's going to join us, Chris. Going to talk some golf course architecture and some other things that he does in the world of golf podcasting and that kind of thing.
Yep, Andy Johnson. And then the Brainerd Girls High School golf team heading to state this next week.
Yeah, we're going to sit down with a few of the girls, hopefully, and they can take 10 minutes out of their practice, which I'm sure they're just so excited. They were going down this week and then... getting ready for action early next week in the state tournament.
Yes.
Yeah. It'll be fun, yeah. Let's talk to those girls. That'll be fun. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan. Now available at Podcast One, also streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Chris, a very special guest. I'll let you handle the introduction today.
I want to introduce Andy Johnson. Andy has a couple great podcasts, The Fried Egg and The Shotgun Start, and puts a lot of great content out on his website, The Fried Egg. And I want to welcome you to the show, Andy.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I always love sharing with our listeners is there's so much great content. Well, there's just so much content in golf out now, and some is better than others, but I always love sharing the best content with our listeners. And you've got two great podcasts, The Fried Egg, which concentrates kind of on golf course architecture, but some other stuff, the state of the game. And then a great podcast three times a week, The Shotgun Start with Brandon Porath. And tell us about your two pods.
Definitely. So I started the Fried Egg a couple of years ago, and I was lucky. I was one of the early podcasters and did something a little bit different than everybody else with the architecture angle. There have been, you know, some great websites out there, but nobody podcasting about it. And architecture, I always was interested, obviously, in competitive golf, too. And so I tried to keep a mix of architecture, competitive golf, pro golfers, college golfers, and just talk about, you know, a wide variety of subjects with the Fried Egg. And it's much more of a deep dive interview podcast where I'm asking the questions and with, you know, a lot of thoughtful guests. And then I started the Shotgun Start with Brendan mid last September, and our kind of idea was to make it a morning radio show, but with podcasts. So we usually record Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday nights, and every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, it's in our listeners' podcast feed, and it's got a little mix of humor, news, and analysis from, you know, the happenings of the PGA Tour and all the other tours, Webb and Senior Tour and European Tour. And we just kind of run down everything that's going on in the golf world.
Yeah, it's great stuff. It's I'm a huge fan of PGA Tour XM Radio, but I found myself Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm listening to the Shotgun Start rather than that. So,
thanks, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and we. We didn't anticipate the podcast being the way it is, but I think it's turned out pretty well so far.
No, it's great. It's great stuff. And, you know, I always feel like, you know, if you're passionate about the game of golf and you, also if you want to become a good player, you have to have some knowledge and appreciation of golf course design. And you do a great job of educating people on that. And kind of share with us your background in design and what people can learn if learning more about golf course design.
It's funny, the great golf course architect Tom Doak, who's designed a number of the world's best modern courses, always says that the caddies would make the best architects because they understand how to navigate a player around the golf course. I grew up caddying. That was my job all the way through college. I spent basically all day, sun up to sundown, at golf courses from the age of 10 through 23. So I during that time, I kind of started to get interested in golf course architecture. And there's a great website, Golf Club Atlas, that I would read. You know, I was like every other college kid reading Golf Club Atlas in my free time. And I was really interested in it. And I went to work in the real world, and that part of my life kind of disappeared with a golf course architecture thing. And then fast forward about 10 years, and I started the Fried Egg and started writing about golf again. And I started with just a newsletter that goes out 3 days a week. It's kind of a rundown of what's going on in golf. And when I started to write articles on my website, I decided, hey, why don't I try writing about golf course architecture and see what people think? And sure enough, there was, this huge appetite for it. I saw, like, right away they were, my best performing articles. And so then I was like, wow, there's something to this, and started writing about golf course architecture more, and eventually started the podcast with a big focus on the subject.
That's interesting. What do you find, Andy, maybe from now more of an expert's point of view, what would you like to see more of in golf course architecture, and are there areas where that you think they could do with less of a certain kind of architecture?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a trend like with golf course architecture. This era that we're in now is with, kind of, it's been led by, the Bandon Dunes type developments with these golf courses out in remote areas, and the design's completely different than when we saw the boom in design in like the 90s, where I kind of like it. I liken it to, we went through a period of time when, golf courses were kind of popping up like subdivisions with, kind of cookie cutter, cookie cutter houses. And, now it's much more of a craftsmanship era where these courses are built by these, architects that are not only designing the golf courses from a, a blueprint standpoint, in layman's terms, but then they're also out there doing all of the work on the bulldozer, shaping and building, these golf courses. So I think we're kind of in this era where we're getting a lot of great new stuff, and where I'd really love to see it continue to develop and evolve is in the public sector. So in not only at resort level, but at the municipal level, so that, more and more of the masses are able to have these great golf experiences in America that for the most part to date have been exclusive to private clubs and to high-end resorts.
Andy, I think there are a couple things. People tend to think of hard golf courses as great design golf courses. And then there's also the perception that the golf courses that are in the best condition are the best design golf courses. And that both of those things aren't really true, are they?
I don't think so. I think that, you can have, a great golf course can be tough.
Yeah.
I think one of the most important things with golf architecture is there aren't any rules, but I think I have a regular podcast with Jeff Ogilvy, who won the 2006 U.S. Open. Obviously, a great golfer, one of the best of the 2000s, and he's also a golf course architect. But he talks about Augusta so much, and I think the way he describes it is so eloquent and on point. But he says, Augusta National for the tour pro is a very easy golf course for them to go out and shoot 72 if they're trying to shoot even par. And for the 18-15 handicap, that golf course is a very easy golf course to go out and shoot 90. You know, play bogey golf. If you're just trying to make bogeys, you can, you know, the average golfer, there's very few force carries, very few hazards, and they can get around it wide fairways. But for the pro, where trying to, when they try and shoot 66 is when they shoot 76. So this idea of a challenging golf course where it becomes more difficult for the great players, but much more, you know, playable for the average golfer. That to me, in my mind, is like the greatest golf courses are able to do that.
Yeah, and how is that achieved, Andy? What are some of the elements that make that?
So I think it's, you know, a water hazard, for example. Say you've got a 250-yard carry. For a great player, that's something they can do 10 times out of 10 for the most part, unless they hit an absolute horrible shot, like a 1 in 1,000 shot. But for the average golfer, that's very difficult. Water in general is very, very difficult for the regular golfer. But for the really great players, I think the subtle challenges are what challenge them more so than the very clear, obvious ones, bunkers, water hazards. So it's like Augusta National is a perfect example, and we'll see it at Pebble a lot too, is like uneven ground where you've got sloping fairways. And that's, I think, hitting from a flat lie for a tour pro or the best player at your club is a very, very simple thing. But hitting a very precise iron from a side hill lie is very challenging, especially when you throw in wind or, you know, a slightly uphill shot. Adding those little variables are what really hang up the great players. And for the 15-20 handicap, you know, that's just, they're just trying to make contact and advance the ball to a certain extent. And that's where those little factors don't affect them as much as a, you know, a tour player.
That's a great point.
Yeah, hook, lie, slice, lie. Guys like me don't really get that. What are you talking about? I'm just going to go hit it.
And I think that's where we, you know, the great great old school courses, like if you're talking about Minneapolis, like White Bear Yacht Club and Interlochen and those in Northland up in Duluth, like those golf courses feature these fairways that you know, when they built them in the 20s, they couldn't afford or feasibly move dirt to flatten a lie. And what happened after World War II is, you know, we had all this, you know, the Industrial Revolution and all this earth-moving equipment that allowed people to create, you know, flat lies in centers of fairways, because that's fair. If you hit it right down the middle, you should have a flat lie. But in actuality, you know, they're to present in fully test players, you know, the best iron players typically win at Augusta because they're the most challenged, you know, the more challenge you present in a subtle way at the PGA Tour level, the cream rises.
And I think it comes across more on the reaction of the players to the great players of the world. Adam Scott this last week in 17, he's won back, I think, at Jack's tournament, and he had a hook lie, fairly severe, and he had to hit a high fade, and he was having to make birdie basically to have any chance of winning. Well, he hits his high fade in there about 12 feet away, and you could see him explaining to the caddy, I had to dig down and turn my arms this way, and he had a big smile on his face, which we can't really see on TV, that how extraordinary a shot that was. Just looked like he's in the fairway like the other guys, but he was really pleased with the results.
Exactly, and you know, an average PGA Tour player from approach, you know, you're talking about one of the greatest ball strikers of this era with Adam Scott, but like an average guy, they're probably, the reality of that situation is that they're going to be ecstatic with a 30-footer, and you know, there's only a handful of guys that can really pull that shot off.
Yeah,
exactly. Andy, if people want to, you know, dive deep into golf course architecture and learn more about it, what are some of the great sources that you have?
Definitely. So there, I mean, a lot of it's been in print. There's Tom Doak's written some really great introductory books. The Anatomy of the Golf Course is his kind of intro book and a great spot to dive in. He also has this little red book that just went back into print. And you can buy it at his website, Renaissance Golf. But that one I really like because it's really approachable. They're short, like, you know, paragraph segments, and yeah, for somebody with like a short attention span like me, you can you can read three paragraphs and put it down and be fine. Then also Jeff Shackelford, who many people might know from the Golf Channel. I mean, he was as prolific of a golf course architecture writer as we have in this era, and he's got a great introductory book, Grounds for Golf.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Golf Club Atlas is a great free resource, and you know, we have a bunch of stuff on our website, friedegg.com.
Yeah, it's a great resource. How about you know, kind of golden age architect books? Any of your, what's your favorite there?
Alistair McKenzie's Spirit of St. Andrews is a great read. I think that's one of my favorites. It's available, if you go on Amazon, you can buy it used for, last time I saw, you know, $5-$10. And one that's a little bit more expensive is Robert Hunter's The Lynx. That's a great book. Unfortunately, a lot of these books are out of print, so you kind of sometimes have to pay up. So, like, I would definitely recommend, you know, dipping your toe in the water with a cheaper book. If you like the subject matter, then kind of dive in. And I think, you know, one of the beautiful things about golf course architecture is, you know, it exposes you to another aspect of the game of golf. And, you know, if you're out there appreciating, you know, the course you're playing on and looking around and noticing things, golf enjoyment becomes more than just score.
Absolutely. You know, one of the cool things about that McKenzie book, I think, is especially if you're in the golf business, it had so many great nuggets of anecdotes or things about not only the golf course design, but managing the golf course and managing a club.
It's amazing to me how many of the things he wrote about in 1926 or 7, whenever, I think it was around that time, are still, like, so applicable today.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unbelievable to me.
Just briefly, guys, you were talking before we went on about the Women's U.S. Open. CCC, is it Carolina Country Club? Is that what it is?
Country Club of Charleston.
Country Club of Charleston, yeah. CCC. Well, you guys are both familiar with that course, and I thought it would be interesting for the listeners to hear how it didn't present itself on TV the way you guys think of it, who've played there, and the beauty of it maybe doesn't come across quite as well on the television.
Yeah, so, it's a Seth Rayner design, and I have to say, Fox did a great job explaining a lot of the intricacies of Rayner, who, you know, he was a great golden age designer. Up in Minneapolis, he did Midland Hills and Somerset, he built these holes with these big contours where, you know, these dramatic slopes, big false fronts. And I think one of the things with golf on TV, it's really like anything, like even photography, it's impossible sometimes to showcase the immense nature of a hole. It's a challenge of photographers face every day. And with TV telecasts, like, you know, I think golf course architecture is a growing interest, and I think you can adjust some of the ways that you traditionally shoot golf holes or shoot the way that you telecast an event with the angles of the cameras that would show the contours a little bit more than they are presented with the traditional angles they shoot at.
Yeah. Well, Andy, great stuff. We really appreciate you coming on the show. One final question for you, and we'll let you go. If you could just play one golf course the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I think just to clarify, is it the whole club and course experience, or is it just purely the golf course?
Let's go whole club.
I would probably, you know, I'd go, I'd stick with my hometown. I'd go with, there's a course called Shore Acres in Lake Bluff, Illinois, that It's designed by the same guy that did Country Club of Charleston, and it's just a wonderful place to go walk around and a very laid back place. So I'd probably go with Shore Acres for every day, and that'd be a good life.
I might join you there, Andy. That would be a good one. So, well, Andy, again, really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge, and hopefully our listeners will be stopping in and listening to the Fried Egg and the Shotgun Start.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
It's Andy Johnson. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZE.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZE. The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you. 1380 KLIZ, The Fan, and streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Mills GM, and also now available at Podcast One. Special segment here. We're at Craigan's live on location when we got this segment with the girls' golf team. They're headed for the state tournament. Kind of a fun interview with three of the members of the Brainerd girls' state-bound golf team. I have some special guests today. Some of my girls were headed to the state tournament for the first time in a long time, 20 years or so. Chris, you handle some of the introductions here, and we'll get going.
Yeah, we've got three of the six players from the Brainerd High School girls team. We've got Izzy Olson, Katie Foley, and Anna Krieger. Welcome to the show, girls.
Thank you.
So, big deal. As we're broadcasting here, it's Saturday morning. State tournament starts. You get a practice on Monday, and turnarounds Tuesday and Wednesday. And tell us about qualifying for state and what you got ahead of you.
It was a fun experience. We played that course a lot this year, and
played where?
Rich Spring and Cold Spring, and it was just, it was a fun, it, we played there a lot, and last year it was there, so it was nice to come back and kind of, last year I know we didn't play as well as we wanted to, so day one we were 7 strokes behind Alex, and we knew going into it that we could do it, and we were getting closer each time, and even our coach said, and all of that, and it was nice to go back in day two, and we had a good energy out there on the course, and everyone knew that we, the whole team was kind of came together, and it was a real big team effort, and Anna and I both had birdie putts on the last 18 that just kind of really put it all together, but...
That's great. You kind of played, as the year went on, you got progressively better and better. And what do you attribute that to? How did you feel going into sections?
We felt, honestly, we knew, like, we had, like, a chance. We've only beat them one time, like, prior to the section meet. So it was kind of like, oh, we can do this. We just got to have fun. And going into day one, we were all, like, pretty nervous, kind of. Like, oh, geez, this is really it. But then when we come back, like, on the second day, we were 7 strokes back, like Katie said. But we all just kind of had, like, a fun energy out there. We weren't, like, too, like, putting too much pressure on ourselves, and just, we just really had fun, so.
And, you know, as their coach, I kind of saw that, too, where day one, they were a lot of nerves and things like that. And then day two, we kind of looked at Alexandria was the favorite there, and the girls were saying, you know, we've got nothing to lose. And hearing Alexandria out on the driving range talking about their hotel their hotel bookings and everything for the state tournament, and they're expecting to go and all of this sort of stuff, I think kind of lit a fire under the Brainerd Warriors team. And the girls just went out there and played really loose and played well, and it was good.
You get a couple rounds in the 70s, girls, on that second day. Has that happened before this year?
Yeah, me and another girl, we had 3 rounds earlier in the 70s from a few people, and then at sections we just played our best.
Now, did you improve 10 shots? Is that right? Was that?
Yeah,
you?
I did improve 10 shots.
What was the difference between day one and two?
Well, first day I started with a triple, second day I started with a birdie, so that really helped.
That's a good start, yeah. Changes the mindset a little bit.
Yeah.
Katie, you got 2 rounds in the 70s. Have you gone back-to-back in the 70s before?
No, that was my first time. I came in, like, with no expectations, but kind of in the back of my head, I knew I could do it. I knew where to place the ball on that course, and I made a putter change over the weekend that really, truly just kind of put it all together for me, and I just kind of jumped a hurdle there. But
so you played a practice round this week at Bunker Hills. You've got one on Monday, and then two tournament rounds. Tell us about the course, what you anticipate going into it, and was that your first round at Bunker for all of you?
Yeah, it was all our first rounds. We kind of, like, went in, we were like, we all kind of thought it was going to be nice. And you go in, you're like, oh, wow, the fairways don't really have that much grass on it. The rough is super thick. It's a really nice, like, you can, like, bump and run that course a lot. So it's just, like, if you're short of the green, it's like, oh, I can get up and down for par. Because there's, like, nothing, like, in the front of the green, really. It's only on the side that's, like, all the bunkers. But, yeah.
So our team might be a little spoiled by the Cragans, Madden, and Grandviews of the world, I suppose.
Yeah, they did have a lot of winter kill down there. I'm pretty sure it's the type of grass they use, and they just had, I think they got a lot of more of the ice this last winter than we did, and so we just kind of were more blessed with a little bit of some nicer conditions going into the season. But I think they should be having as good a shape as they can for the state tournament this year.
And what do the three of you think about the strengths of your own games? What would you say they are?
Well, I know for sure mine is my weakness is the short game. Because, yeah, I don't know, but I can bomb my drivers occasionally.
You see it's a long way.
For me right now, it's putting. Making my putter change is a big step for me, and that's really what's pulling it together at the moment. But
my irons are my strength, Nath. I can hit mostly almost every green, so that helps.
Todd, you know, the last several years we've had some good girls teams, and you know, probably this team I knew coming up that this team was going to be very good, but we've had some good teams in the past. What's been the difference between this team going to state and the teams we've had the past couple of years, which probably had the ability to?
I think just, well, the addition of Anna coming on last year was a big shot in the arm for the team, and just the amount of grit that she has out there on the course, that she doesn't ever quit, doesn't ever give up. And I think that's helped everybody overall. And, you know, just their work ethic as we go around the table here and here, everybody's talking about short game. And that's all we've done for the last week now is to spend time out here with short game, and they continue to work on that. And their commitment and their dedication has been huge.
Let's name the other three girls since they're not here, so you girls can give them a little props.
There's Abby Polkamp, Ellie Bymark, and Alexis Benghini.
We're all seniors on the team, and out with jobs and college visits and all those things as seniors have, but they've been here all the other times working and just couldn't make it this morning.
Senior leadership with a bunch of youngsters on the team. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Some seniors have been here before.
Mm-hmm. Izzy, something unique. This is your third state tournament appearance this year.
It is.
I would guess there aren't too many boys or girls in the state that could could say that they've played in three different state tournaments this year. So, obviously golf coming up here next week, and what are the other two?
Diving and gymnastics.
Okay, excellent. Mm-hmm. And what do you anticipate differently in this championship compared to the other two?
I think that it's just going to be more fun. Not saying that the other ones were fun. It's just we're such like a close team. So it's just going to be like we're all like be making jokes and just like have fun. And it'll be.
And the patch on your sweatshirt will say golf instead of
diving. Yeah. I'll have three of the same.
If there's any room on the sweatshirt left.
Yeah.
Todd, how's the communication? But is it Ryder Cup style? Do the girls know how the other girls are playing, or they just kind of concentrate on their own game?
Yeah, the nice thing is that we get to have two coaches down there since we qualified as a team, and that really helps that we can spread out a little bit. Like last year when Coach Wallace had three boys qualify, he couldn't have any other coaches with him, so he was it out on the course. When you get a team, then you get six. With six players, you get to have two coaches out there, so Coach Ollie and I can kind of be in communication back and forth. And I really thought that was a key thing in that final day of sections, that Ellie Bymark and Alexis Benghini came off and both put 40s up on their first nine and just told the girls that, hey, we're close. They're pushing hard up at the front, those front groups, and let's keep going. And that just kind of kept the attitudes positive and on the up and up. And I think that helped a lot, and hopefully it will as we get into the tournament.
Let's talk about those birdies on 18. When you're tied at 661, those two birdies were fairly important.
Yeah, it was fun. Our teammates were the last two groups out there, and our teammates were waiting on the 18th for us. And both of my girls were off the green and getting ready. They were putting from the fringe and getting ready to hit, and they had both tried to chip, and I was really ready, and so I'm like, do you mind if I go? And knowing, I kind of stepped up knowing I was able to make that one, which was kind of nice. And I knew I went from, like, I had a birdie, like, I think, like, five holes back. And so I was even through 17 because I had a bogey on that 17th hole. But then to birdie the last hole and go one under really threw my round together for me personally.
And it was kind of a cool atmosphere because when Katie dropped that putt, Coach Ollie was at the green with the rest of the team, and he basically had to holler at the girls and Izzy and to get off the green and come back. They're still playing. We still have groups to come in because Anna was still back on the tee coming up. So
reminds me of a Ryder Cup back in '97.
And Anna, with yours,
you had a long one, Anna.
Yeah. Like for the past six holes, I'm like, I'm just gonna bomb my driver, which I shouldn't have hit my driver, but I was going to anyway. And I hit it, everyone's watching, I hit it about 30 yards, and all I could tell myself was not to chunk this. So I everyone didn't see that. And then I almost holed out, and then I had an 18 footer, and I putted, and I usually hit the ball too hard, and Alex girl's like, you want the flag? And I was like, yeah. So I hit the putt, and it's rolling. I'm like, slow down, slow down. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, get in, get in. And then it went in, and I'm like, that was big.
So the flag in rule helped.
Yeah.
I don't think that putt would have dropped without the flag in.
No. When she hit that, I was like watching and I'm like, Anna, oh my gosh, you hit that so dang hard. And I was just sitting there, I'm like, Anna, oh my God, please go away, please go away, please go away. And right when that went in, we're like, okay, it's going to be so close. And when we added up the scores, we were one back. And because, like, we're all thinking, oh, eight to beat them. So we're like, oh, well, we just missed that by one. But we're all thinking, okay, that's eight strokes, but we actually tied them. And everyone was congratulating us, and we're like, oh, we just lost by one stroke. And so then we just kept adding it, and then we just realized that we won.
And then there was some question of what the tiebreak was going to be, but we figured it either way if they had counted our low round both the first day and the second day, we would have come out ahead in the second day for sure with the round that Alexis had. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Girls, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
Good luck this week, and it's just a thrill. I was telling Todd that Gene Martin mentioned we were going to a baseball playoff game. Eric's her son, and she said, back, it was 20 years ago today that the girls won the state tournament, and Gene coached that team. And I said, Chris, just text me. Our girls are going to state this year, so that was kind of fun.
It's exciting, so thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you. 1380 KLIZ, The Fan, streaming at KLIZ.com and now available at Podcast One. Thanks to our guests, Andy Johnson, Architecture, and Fried Egg, and Shotgun Start
the
podcast,
Shotgun Start,
both
yeah.
And the Fried Egg, both very entertaining, and he had a whole list of references for golf, which is really fun, and you knew a lot of them, so because you're a voracious golf reader, I know.
Yeah, I probably consume more golf content than just about anybody, and I love it.
Thanks to the girls' golf team, Brainerd Warrior Girls. We certainly wish them well as they head off to play in the state tournament for the first time in a while. So, team champion. I was talking with Gene Martin, and we were on our way to a baseball game, and Eric, her son, plays baseball. So they were riding along, and she said, this is before we knew anything about the girls. I knew, but she didn't. It was 20 years ago today we won the state championship in golf, Mac. I said, and she coached that team in 99. I said, Gene, did Chris just text me? The girls made it. They're going. They're going to state. Yep. Oh, and what a story that was. We had fun to have the girls on. The boys, I'll tell you, that section has turned into a buzzsaw in boys golf. That was, it was four of the good scores of the top four teams. As I can remember, I mean, we've been right there in second and within a shot and here or there, and boy, this week, Buffalo, Moorhead, Alexandria, Brainerd, I think just about every kid shoots under 80, yeah. Which is extraordinary, really.
Yeah, really good. And, you know, and not only our Brainerd team, the, you know, Pequot Lakes boys had played very well. Crosby is playing very well, and we had, I know, two players for sure from Pequot Lakes, Henry Neva and Tyler Sealing qualified for the state championship, and I haven't heard the results
I think Erholtz is going, right?
Yes.
On the boys' side, from Staples, right?
And Crosby, today is Wednesday that we're taping. The last day of their sections may be today.
Yeah.
But some great stuff.
Yeah, headed for the state tournament. How fun that is. And again, good luck to the girls as they head down to the state tournament. We were talking about our schedules a little bit when we came in today, and yours with weather in particular has backed up everything you do. You've got youth clinics and adult clinics, and you try to come in here and squeeze in this, which we appreciate, of course. One thing we kind of neglected a while back, the 19th hole is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka with us, and you had your second trip out to Pine Valley, which is, it's a place where nobody gets to go play golf, and now you've got to go twice, Chris. It's exclusive, for lack of a better word, and It's just a really high-end golf course that is thought of highly around the world, one of the best golf courses in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty typically number one, number two in all the rankings in the world of golf. And it's such a fantastic experience. It's if you listen to Andy Johnson talk about golf course architecture, Pine Valley was built in the 1920s and just outside Philadelphia in New Jersey, so right across the river from Philadelphia. And it Philadelphia was kind of a hotbed of golden age golf course architecture. And there was really a collaboration of the main guy behind it was a guy named George Crump, but there were many architects that kind of came and collaborated with him on the site. And it's built in the what they call the New Jersey Sand Barrens, and it's just a absolutely fantastic layout. There no two holes are alike. It's very wide off the tee. It's a fairly easy driving golf course, but very difficult around the greens. And you're kind of walking through sand all day, and it's a fantastic walk. It's beautiful, and the whole setting is really neat. It's very understated, nothing pretentious about it. But you stay right there on site. They've got cottages and what they call the dormy house, and the food is fantastic. The caddies are great, and the golf is kind of second to none.
Yeah. How'd you play this year?
You know, I hit enough good shots that I was pretty happy with my game. I drove it really well. My iron game was not great. I was disappointed in that, but I putted reasonably well, and I chipped and pitched the ball pretty well, so I was pretty happy.
Yeah. And you probably did. You get a chance to visit the 19th hole?
You know, we did enjoy the 19th hole a couple times, and they had Tito's Handmade Vodka as their house brand, and their drink, kind of their famous drink there, is the Transfusion, which is Tito's Handmade Vodka and ginger ale and a little bit of grape juice, Welch's grape juice, and it's very refreshing.
I'm going to dust my clubs off this week, and May is just a tough month with all the baseball games I call after my regular job. So and the way that fell this year was even more difficult with the rain and then getting games in. So now my teammates are going to have to hoist me up on their shoulders in men's league and carry me around for a few weeks.
How is the which team are you on, Mac?
Shep's on six.
Yeah, that's right. You guys are defending champions, aren't you?
No. We've never been champions.
Oh, I thought you guys won the.
We raced out of the gate last year, had a nice lead, and then collapsed down the stretch when
and
the pressure.
Where are you at right now? You haven't played.
I haven't played yet. But, so I think we need a little spark. So maybe I can provide a little.
I think you're gonna get out there and lead the team.
Yeah. Well, first time out, that's usually okay. You know? Just close my eyes, don't remember any of my bad habits.
That's right.
And then they go, oh, yeah, that's your handicap, right? All right. Good show, Chris.
Thanks, Mac.
That's Chris Foley. I'm Colin McDonald, and you've been listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan. Today's broadcast is sponsored by Craigan's Legacy Courses, Tito's Handmade Vodka, Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, The Tea Hive, The Holiday Station on Mill Avenue, and Maury's Market. Streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, sponsored by Mills GM. We now return to our regularly scheduled program at the Lake Sports Talk 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.